Hello, welcome to the Mac Show. Yes, we're back. We're here to discuss the week in Apple, all the things that have gone on. My hangover has cleared up. I'm sorry last week's show was a bit subdued, but I had been absolutely out of my face the night before. Thanks to Mark for coming down as well from Hoya. He was tired from the end of the week, so Doc 4 a.m, Mark tired from a hard week working, and me still with a hangover. It wasn't perhaps the most interesting show we've ever done. Joining me, though, this week to discuss the week in Apple, a fantastic bunch. This should be lively discussion in the extreme. Top left, starting us off, Don, where the bloody hell have you been, mate?
Oh, it's not been that long. It's only been a month or two, if that. Oh,
it feels like it's been ages.
Anyway. It's nice to be back, though.
A month or two.
See, this is what I tried. See, if it was, and just try and make it now and again, and then you're waiting for it then rather than sort of taking me for granted.
A month of two in the life of an international traveller is not that much.
I know. I've done very well these past few months. I've been cracking on, getting some work done this time.
We get Ranulph Fiennes on and he'd cover less distance between shows than you do.
No comment.
Next to him, it's Adam, man from the Boom Cupboard. How have you been, mate? Not seen you for a couple of weeks.
Good. Yeah, I missed a couple of weeks. I feel bad about that, but no, I'm here now.
No. It's a purely voluntary exercise, mate, I promise. How's work, life, and things?
Busy, you know. The holidays, stuff is happening.
Good.
Family, friends. It's a good time of year.
Still no plans to get out of the Broom Cupboard?
That's a funding issue. We got to figure things out around here.
Okay. All right. I said move on. And last but by no means least, because Doc's not here yet. Kelly!
I did beat him here.
Otherwise,
so
Doc
I do have that
last.
Going for me.
How you doing, mate?
Good.
I just want to apologize in retrospect for Muller last week and anything I may have said, though I can't remember. I started watching the post-show recording that we did. And I had to stop because I cannot talk in it.
That's true, you cannot.
In case you missed it, last Thursday's big show was rather special. It was 2.25 hours long. I feel like there was good content in there.
Yeah.
Because I had to listen to the whole thing because I couldn't remember it. Before I posted it.
Jokes.
And I looked for the swear words. And actually, we only swore in the first bit, and that was righty mostly. So, and then the rest of it was fine, and it was a good time. We the finer points of Machete, Star Wars, and other things. Weta's fancy sack, and it's all gone a bit Griswold, or Griswold territory, or something. Was one of the comments that came out. We've had an email. Thank you very much to the people that bother to write in. We do appreciate it, and we will do read all of your correspondence. This one's from Gary Marshall. And he says, hi, I've travelled to Dubai from Saudi to visit the new Apple store in the Mall of Emirates. It's supposed to be the largest in the world, although I definitely think it isn't, to buy an iPad Pro. I think they had 6 iPad Pros on displays and had mentioned in the previous Mac program situated by the entrance doors with only 2 pencils available that you could play with. Sadly, no iPads available to buy. I could buy a pencil, but that was in limited supply. No Apple smart cases or Logitech versions in stock. I asked an Apple rep about the lack of iPads, and I was astonished at his answer, that worldwide it was very popular and couldn't be produced in sufficient quantities, as we are paying for a premium product, shouldn't it be available? I feel lately we have been very patient with Apple, and here in Saudi it's almost non-existent, and forget about the pencils and cases. On the bright side, my wife was able to buy a new strap for her watch. I found a smart case in another store, but I still couldn't find an iPad to fit in it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gary. I do appreciate that, mate. But Gary lives in Saudi, obviously, from that, I think. So he's travelled all the way and been our foreign reporter for this week. Thank you, Gary. Superb, mate.
You guys know... Since you brought up the Apple Store and Logitech cases, so I bought the Logitech Create case day one, and my Apple Smart case showed up, and I decided that's the one that is the right one for me, and I had mentioned on my show that I was going to sell the Create case. I got an email from someone at the Apple Store, and they said, oh, hey, we have our holiday return stuff going on right now. And if you bought it, you know, at anything after November 11th, trying to find the dates, you can bring back, I think, until the end of the year.
Wow.
Yeah,
so I
think
just returned it.
So it's a crap present return system.
Huh?
Crap present return system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I thought that was great. I didn't know they had a holiday returns thing.
Yeah, it's more than 14 days after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, the normally it's 14 sort of, days, but
is
yeah.
That for
open
products as well, or did you have to take it back just with the packaging, or?
Well, Logitech's packaging now is totally not sealed. I don't know if you've seen the Logitech stuff, but it's actually kind of nice because you can open it up in the store and get access to like check stuff out. It's got a magnetic clasp, and you know you can pull stuff out and look at it. So I just kind of put everything back in nicely and.
Well, that was because the thing is, it's like a little snap-up spine thing on magnets, isn't it? That snaps shut, and it's beautiful. But that's one of the key purchasing features for me when I bought my iPad Pro. Right, need a case. Can I have a smart case? Yes. Can I have a Logitech case? Yes. Can I have a look at the smart case? Nope. Can I have a look at the Logitech case? Yep. That looks great. I'll have that. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Well, and all their products, at least in the Apple Store, have been like that. They're not shrink wrap. They're not, you know...
Bubble pack.
I thought was bad at first because I thought, oh, you know, people are going to be manhandling and touching these things. But I don't think it's been a problem. And I really appreciate it because you can check out the case, you can pull it out. And I've done it with a lot because they have a lot of different kinds of keyboards. And you kind of want to, you know, you can pull it out in the store and actually kind of get a little test drive of it. It's nice.
Yeah, I know. Don, did you buy a smart case with yours?
Yeah, well, I went with the I bought the pencil online. I also bought the keyboard to go with it just to try it out. And then when it actually arrived, obviously the pencil and the keyboard didn't arrive because they were going to take a week or so later. So when I actually took the iPad Pro out of its packaging, I was a bit concerned because it's such a large device. I just really didn't want to do anything with it without any sort of case on. So I ended up going for the it is the smart, you know, the smart cover and the plastic back, or the Apple one. And it was horrendously expensive. It was unbelievable. I think it was about £120 for both of them, which is scandalous for a bit of plastic.
What they are.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, to be honest, I wouldn't be without it because I think it does need the case. And at least now, I mean, the keyboard has arrived, so it does work with the plastic shell cover as well. So I sort of interchange because I don't really need the keyboard all that often. So I can just pull off the keyboard, the back case stays on, and then I just replace it with the smart cover. So it's a nice system, but horrendously expensive. I think it's scandalous.
I've got to say, for me, for iPads, the best case that there ever was the magnet case that went on the. Is that you or me? Muller. The magnet case that went on the iPad 3. That was easily the best. It snapped on beautifully, folded shut, and it was strong as well. It was really well made. The leather on it, you know when you get old leather and it starts to fray at the edge and you can see that it's, you know, the quality of the tanning and stuff like that. That was the one that I felt was worth the money most definitely. And the ones that I've had since, you know, and especially I hate the ones that you have to press the iPad into the case and then the folder works. I love the fact that you can just rip that thing off and put it to one side if you wanted to and then slim it back on, and it was back on and closed. Easily the best case. Easily the best.
Absolutely.
Apple's gone Apple TV mad. They've released a new commercial, which is this kind of test card type look with loads of different shapes popping up and going through it, showing how great the Apple TV can be. And they've also pushed out a whole load of stats that have gone on. So 3-4 weeks in, we're now up to 2,621 apps in the App Store. Available to people. The purchases are mostly games, it would seem. There's an awful lot of games in there, an awful lot of entertainment, and then it all shopping non-existent, which I've got to say, I thought shopping would be absolutely key to the Apple TV. And finally, then iPad pricing, Apple TV pricing. Not surprisingly, the 99p and 199 apps are the ones that are flying off the shelves pretty swiftly, because I think you'd probably burn 99 cents to find out what it's like. Any thoughts? Because I mean, we've got a new OS this week as well. So, any thoughts on Apple TV.
I'm glad they finally figured out that the remote app really needed to work with it, and I don't remember which update it was that fixed that, but
this one.
Thank goodness. Well, no, I don't remember if it was that, because Apple TV got an update and iOS got an update as well, and I don't remember which one was the one that because I heard both. So whatever it was, it's high time that you were able to type a password on an iPhone screen. And that was never a thing I thought I would be excited about until I stopped being able to do it on my Apple TV. So I was mostly interested to see what the other half of the App Store was, because I think I saw somewhere that like 50% of what's in the Apple TV App Store right now is games. And
no,
I'm curious what the other stuff, what kind of other stuff people are really interested in. Because I too thought the shopping thing would be a big one.
Yeah.
And apparently it's not, so...
What were you saying, Adam?
I'm pretty sure you said there's like 2,600 apps in the Apple TV App Store,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, 1,000 of them are games.
I think 2,000 of them are Fireplace apps. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. And I think that's the entertainment category.
Yeah, no, there's 1,000 games in that lot, so...
Yeah, I know.
I've noticed people are trying to push the prices up a little bit in the Apple Store, in the Apple TV App Store. They seem to be a little bit more expensive than you know, iOS generally, which isn't a bad thing. You know, don't get me wrong. I think it's a good idea that developers should be able to charge a decent price for the software that they make and make a living from it.
One of the things that struck me as being really cool was an awful lot of applications said, oh, you've already bought this on iOS.
Yes.
So here you go. Bang. Got it instantly. And it was one of the things was it was the first app I actually ever downloaded. Back when I had the version 1 Apple iPad, and it was the shuffleboard game. And that instantly works on Apple TV, and it's very playable. And the tennis one, so you could swing, and that was already optimized for the bat thing, and that was all free. And then you look at people like Carrot, who, I mean, it's funny, don't get me wrong, but you buy the TV application and it's no different than the iOS application, the same crap jokes, and they want $2.99 off you. And you're like, stuff that. I'm sorry, you've lost me there, people. You lost me.
That's fine. I think they recognize that. But, I mean, we also have a sustainability problem with apps, and there was work that went into building an Apple TV app, and it's not insignificant. It's not like you just flip a switch and suddenly your app's Apple TV. You know, there's development hours, there's support time. They've got to support those customers. There's a lot involved that I think people don't factor in. And yes, it's nice when a developer chooses, and I appreciate it too, but I also understand the ones that are saying, look, you know, this is my livelihood, this is how I make a living, and this is how I'm going to choose to do it. And people don't have to buy it. I mean, you don't have to buy it if you don't want it, but I don't begrudge them for making that choice.
Well, I think the only thing that I would say is that you look at the type of apps that had done quite significant changes. Like I say, one of the tennis apps that I had, it had already put in integration into the paddle. For use of the remote as a tennis racket, and I was like, well, I would have paid for that again, because that's a change of functionality. It's not just a screen orientation issue. And the shuffleboard one, well, shuffleboard actually, when you play it on your iPhone, it's a portrait game, and then you can go backwards and forwards from portrait and landscape, and the proportions aren't significantly different for 16:9 on your thing, and they'd done remote integration, so you could skim on the remote to throw the thing. So there's quite significant changes in those, and yet I've got these free and instantly. But Carrot has done nothing other than put the information in a different place. It's the same API. It's pulling the same data off the Weather Channel, I guess, or something like that. And then to go and charge me $2.99 for that when I've already bought it. If you're saying, hang on, you know, if you want to buy it as a fresh app, it's $2.99. Yeah, got no problem with that at all. But there's a certain grandfathering there with a simple app like that I would have expected. And I love Carrot. Carrot's great, don't get me wrong.
Right. No. I understand that too. But at the same time, I mean, I worry about developers. And it's interesting that you point out the ones that added features didn't charge. And that's actually part of the problem is... They've left money on the table. You just said you would have paid for those features. And then not only that, what happens is it sets a precedence where people suddenly think, well, when I buy it here, I'm going to get it free everywhere else, because that's what developers do.
No, I just think it's if you want $2.99 off me again, put some effort in. And I didn't feel like there was any effort there.
I get that too.
Right.
I'm not trying to say, I understand what you're saying about Carrot and their choices. I'm just trying to move this into this bigger conversation of something that I'm very concerned about. I just did a whole show for MacCast members where I talked about this, and it came up this week with the Mac App Store, because some developers are leaving the Mac App Store, or I think that was 2 weeks ago probably. But
yeah,
you know, you get the point is that we have to, like, as Mac people in the Mac community, we have to sort of out that we need developers to make smart business choices and do the things that they need to do to make money. And then we as consumers have to also be accepting and willing that when they do, and again, not using Carrot as the example here, because like you said, there wasn't a lot of extra functionality there, but for the ones that are putting in extra functionality, we should be encouraging them, you know, the Shuffle people, why didn't you charge for this? You should have charged, you know, a 99 cents or something, so that, because I want you guys to be around, because I like your app and I want you to make a living and I want you to make more apps and do those sorts of things. So yeah, there's a give and take that needs to happen that I just feel very often doesn't happen.
Sorry, Don, go ahead.
Yeah. No, it's the same with all the app stores, isn't it? And Apple don't make it easy for developers to actually, you know, charge an incremental price. And they can do app purchases and stuff like that. But I mean, I felt the same when, you know, when iOS 9 came out and everyone went away and re-engineered the applications to use slide over and the split view, you know, and the majority, in fact, virtually every developer actually did that for free. And I would have liked some way to, you know, sort of be able to pay for that, because it was a lot of work for them to do that.
I think it's impossible, isn't it, to do an in-app purchase for OS compatibility? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's right. That's right. Yeah. But you know, it's in some respects, it's Apple sort of tying their hands, really, and the only way they can do it is to create a brand new application, and that causes lots of bad will. I think the main thing is we don't want to feel ripped off, but we still want to make sure that developers are able to, as Adam said, have a sustainable business, really. And at the moment, the tools aren't really in place for them to do that easily, I don't think.
Well, and I don't think that necessarily, I mean, no, nobody wants to feel ripped off, but I feel like the bar where people feel like that continues to drop, because like, I don't mind paying whatever it is that Omnigroup wants to charge me for whatever app it is that they have, because I know I'm going to get that value out of it. I know, you know, I know what I'm in for when it comes to their apps. Now, if I was a brand new customer to Omnigroup, I don't know that I would necessarily be as ready to do that. I like to think I would, but I think that, I mean, there's a number of software places where, you know, they release something that is a paid upgrade. You know, like if you had the old app, the new app is now, you know, a new $2 even will cause people to just lose their minds. And, you know, I've been a support person who had to wade through all that feedback when that sort of thing happened. And, you know, even for a small upgrade to something that is a really useful app, you know, I'm not talking about games or anything like that. I'm talking about something that people use every day. You know, you get accused of highway robbery, you get accused of being a gangster, you get accused of, like, all kinds of stuff that I won't repeat so that Ewan doesn't have to cut the show. Like, for serious. And to me, that's just sort of weird, because I've never had a problem paying for software. The problem is that software became its own creature when you started being able to get paid upgrades. You know, like, you don't pay full price for an Adobe product every time a new version comes out. You pay part of the price if you already owned it. And, you know, very little in the world works that way. So, you know, there's not the perception there is very, very different. And I think we saw the same thing with watch apps, honestly. I saw so many updates come out. And maybe I noticed them more than most people because I don't have an Apple Watch and I still had all these updates that I had to install in order to get watch compatibility, and that wasn't something that I cared about.
I think,
and I still had all these updates to install for that, which I didn't even need.
Within this is one of the frailties, I think, maybe, though, of the App Store, in that more and more I've become in my own mind, satisfied and more appealing, appealed to subscription models, because then, you know, I was vocal about my dislike of Creative Cloud because I wasn't getting a lot from that, but now I am getting a lot from Creative Cloud, with particularly with the iPad and the applications being free for all of that, for that with the iCloud, the Apple Cloud subscription, the Creative Cloud subscription.
Yeah.
And I don't mind my £8.95 a month that I just pay, that's negligible in terms of business cost and gives me so much of great value. And if I don't like it, I can stop it in a heartbeat. It's it's there and it's done. Don's Screencasts Online are another good example. You know, if you love Don's Screencast, and you should, then you can watch and watch them, pay your annual subscription. But if at any point you go, do you know what, I'm sorry, Don, but I don't like him anymore, you can just choose to stop. And I think that's the trouble that a lot of developers have got. They're in this walled garden within Apple, but there is no real justifiable and workable subscription model where people can say, do you know what, you see now Omni, a lot of the Omni stuff, I look at that and I look at the price tag and I'm kind of like, but I want to know that's definitely going to do what it's going to do for me before I'm willing to drop that kind of cash on it. And that's, you know, it's not an awful lot of money still, but it's enough for me to go, I want to see what it'll do. And you get five screenshots to decide whether it's the right piece of software for you. You know, and if that, you know, there's no try me within the App Store. There's no, and that's where, you know, the in-app purchase thing's good perhaps for that kind of stuff. But what I'd love to say is, right, let me have a month-by-month subscription, because I would pay £5 to try Omni. And then just get it rebuilt through my Apple subscriptions on through my iCloud account every month for it. That would be fine, but that doesn't exist.
Yeah, right. I mean, Apple is public enemy number one in a lot of these things, a lot of these problems. The not allowing trials, the not allowing paid upgrades, the percentage that they take. I mean, developers look at subscriptions, and you notice that Adobe and Microsoft don't do their subscriptions through Apple. And a lot of the entertainment content didn't for a long time because of that 30%, you know, is a factor. I mean, it's something they have to consider. I'm not saying that it's why they don't do it, but I think it factors into the decision. Yeah. And the other side of things is, like, getting back to what Kelly was mentioning about software and this sort of perception that happens to people that, you know, software is worth X. Well, you know, Apple gives away super high quality apps in its iWork suite and its iLife suite, and they've set the price at free. So they set a bar too for a lot of people. Right. And then consumers go, well, geez, if Apple can do that for, and they don't think about the fact that Apple's making their money really elsewhere. They're just looking at the App Store and going, well, you know, here's iWork and I can get Numbers and Keynote and Pages for, you know, free. And you want to charge me, you know, $2.99 for your note app. Well, screw you, right?
Well, so, and think about a lot of people, like regular folks, people who, not people on this show, not people even who listen to this show, think that if you are a developer, you work for Apple. And and what little they know of Apple is, like, Apple has a lot of money, you know? And that's basically it. Is you know, I can't count the number of developers who have told me stories about how, here's what happens to me all the time. I tell people I write apps for the iPhone and they all presume I work for Apple. And a lot of people are kind of in that perception. And when you think that Apple has a lot of money, like with the new, with the Apple TV commercial for Christmas, with Stevie Wonder, it came on a TV. Funny story, it came on TV at my house the other night, and Mr. Kelly said, so what are they selling me? And I said, it's just Apple. And he said, do you know what that commercial tells me? And I said, what? And he said, we have all the money. Here's Stevie Wonder. And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's about the long and the short of it, I think, there. I would love to have a time demo. And the thing that astounds me about all of this stuff is, like you said, Adam, it's public enemy number one. Apple is the problem with a lot of this stuff. Apple is the reason there's no trial. You know, when Omni found a creative way around the pricing model in the App Store to be able to do upgrade pricing, you know, Apple smacked them down. And like, anytime anybody does anything for that seems like it would be good for consumers and good for developers, you know, it seems like somehow Apple ends up in the way of that. And like, if you go to something, to a conference that is primarily for users, something like Macworld was, if you go to that, lots of people are like, yay, Apple. And if you go to a, to like a Mac IT conference or a Mac Enterprise conference or Mac admins at Penn State, like, you get almost the photo negative experience because, you know, the, like, because like enterprise tools aren't really there because the App Store stuff leaves a lot to be desired. You know, and all of these things that are basic tools that would be really nice for people to have. I mean, I think part of the reason the subscriptions aren't available in the App Store, honestly, is because at that point, they're not, you're not an Adobe customer or you're not a Microsoft customer because Adobe and Microsoft have no idea who you are if you buy it through the App Store because Apple gets all that information. Microsoft doesn't get all that information. So I think that a lot of that is Apple's fault.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, the tools are there. I mean, in Newsstand, you can use subscriptions. I, you know, I've got that with my Screencast Online monthly magazine. That's had a subscription for a couple of years now. So the tools and the technologies are there. It's just how they apply them. And I think the past 12 months or even 18 months, Apple have taken an awful lot of stick about the App Store and what they are and what they're not doing. And I'm sure they must be listening to this. And hopefully that at this WWDC, they address some of these concerns. Because it raised its head again when the iPad Pro came out. You know, we want Pro software to be available for the iPad Pro, but the tools and mechanisms aren't there for people. Because, you know, as you said, you really, if you're going to pay for an expensive bit of software, you want to try it first. And to not have free trials or demos is just ludicrous, really.
It'd be easy to put a timed 30 days. You can have it for 30 days and then we'll cut you off.
Run it for a couple of hours. Like, I've seen that. That used to be a thing on old shareware applications on the Mac. Was you can have it running on your computer for, you know, it was like 4 hours or something. Maybe that 4 hours took an afternoon. Maybe it took a month. But whatever it is, like once you hit that 4 hours, it was like, nope, now you have to pay. And by that point, you know, whatever the application was, like depending on the time limit, you could get a pretty good idea. Most people were pretty reasonable about that.
Deep Pan says, if there was a try me option on App Store apps, the market of crap applications would be killed off overnight. Yay! I don't know if he's writing that as a good thing or a bad thing, but well, there's a huge amount of income, don't forget though. People spending 99 cents on a shit app and then having to watch it again and then go, oh, crap, and then getting rid of it. I bet I've got an awful lot of applications that I'm willing to burn £2 on, £3 on. And then they go, oh, it's not what I want. I'm quite happy to do that. I'll probably end up, you know, you look at Omni at 30 or 40 quid, and I'll probably burn 30 or 40 quid looking through apps that I don't like at £2. and Don Muller says, no one stops the Don. If you choose to stop your subscription, you'll end up with a horse's head in your bed.
No, we don't go there.
Deep Pan's qualified. Yes. It's definitely a good thing. I think Apple TV now has got loads of potential. It's just interesting where it goes, and
I
agree with Don. It's down to the hardware's only cool by the apps.
Early days as well for the Apple TV. I think we haven't seen. I mean, all the apps that are in there now.
Four versions in.
Standard. You know, the apps that people have been able to crank out fairly quickly.
Yeah, they're converted.
There's no real sort of innovation in the Apple TV apps other than one or two apps which, you know, I've only seen demos of. I've not actually used them because I don't think they're available here, but you know, I think it's very early days and we're going to see lots and lots more apps.
There's going to be some amazing stuff. I mean, it's developers are going to get very creative, just like they did with every other platform. What's exciting about the Apple TV is now they actually have a platform and their own operating system to build uniquely designed experiences. So they're off, you know, figuring out what those are right now, and we're going to see some really cool stuff.
I'm excited about it. I really want that to be, that's the thing that I was most hoping for. That's why every time we got a new WWDC and I would go, new Apple TV, we need new Apple TV. And it was partly home automation, but it was partly, I need there to be an app store. And I'm also hoping that now that we have this app store as well, that we will get that Apple will finally see, like, discovery is crap. It's hard to, you know, it's hard to operate some of this stuff. Like, the discovery needs to be really, really different than what it is right now. And, you know, like, right now there's 2,600 apps in the App Store and on Apple TV, and that's kind of overwhelming. And that's 2,600 apps. There are over 1 million in the iTunes App Store. And, And I know it's over a million because it was a really high 900,000 number last summer when we looked it up for App Camp. So I really want for, like, once app stores for Apple reach critical mass, I really hope that there's something, like, fundamentally to shift and make that a much better experience that's coming from Apple. I really, really want that to happen. Because if it happens for us, maybe it'll happen for developers. Maybe that's something that will come with trials and come with an easier way to upgrade and things like that. That's my hope.
Apple TV's plans have fallen apart or have been put on hold, it suggests, for content owners. They're saying that Apple was hoping for a limited number of 25 channels at a price of $30 to $40 from providers. But early on, it seems that the content providers have pushed back and suggested that that is just not enough. Disney and Apple, Disney was pushing for an inclusion of ESPN, Disney Channel, Disney Junior, Disney XD, ESPN2, ESPN Classic, and a few more, while Apple wanted to offer just a couple of the Disney channels. Is this the... Because Apple's already kind of had this with the music industry, like, don't be greedy and you'll sell more. Is this the same kind of situation again now with the kind of tussle that they went through with movie and... music.
The irony is what they're going to wind up with is, I think, again, race to the bottom mm-hmm. pricing, because they're all going to do their own channels and they're going to try and sell them at, you know, $10 a month or $5 a month, and they're going to find that consumers can't foot that. You know, you can only mm-hmm. buy so many subscriptions, so they're going to have to pick and choose. So there's going to be a lot more competition, and that's totally in contrast to how they work with the cable companies right now. I mean, it's a complete opposite with cable companies. They can force them to take these giant bundles, right? And then the cable company eats the price. When they're going to try and shift that onto consumers, and I go, you know what, Disney, I really don't care about any of your ESPN channels. I don't want to pay for them in a big giant packaged app. You know, mm-hmm. I'm fine with HBO and Netflix. Then you're not going to get, you know, any of my money. And so I think they're going to end up leaving money on the table.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that they're in a different situation as well, Apple, as regards to the music thing, because when they first started to get into the music, I mean, the music industry was in a big hole because they had such a serious piracy problem. So the music industry were very welcoming to Apple to, you know, come and help us sort out this mess. I think with movies and TVs, although there is an element of piracy, it's certainly nothing like it was with music. But they're just so entrenched with the cable companies, and they're making so much money hand over fist that, you know, mm-hmm. why would they want to split it into smaller chunks and reduce revenue? Yeah. So they're being very protectionist against what they've got already, and Apple are going to find it hard to break that down. I mean, it will come eventually, but, you know, it's not an easy process for them.
No. I just think as well that the amount that you can consume, you know, I had to watch Man in the High Castle because I was on Cord Killers on Monday night with Tom Merritt and Brian Brushwood, and I caught up on four episodes very quickly on Amazon Prime Video. Mm-hmm. And I've got to say, Amazon Prime Video on is a great app anyway, but Amazon Prime Video on the iPad Pro just is a new lease of life entirely. But I, you know, that was the thing that struck me. I need to watch this now. I need to get up to speed on this. So I sit down and I have a binge session of watching it to make sure I get up to speed in time for the show. And I can do that because Amazon's totally getting the way I want to watch TV. It's totally getting the idea of the pricing of it, as in excluded in my annual subscription for Prime. And Netflix is getting that. And I'm just sitting thinking, you're going to have Disney and they're going to play stuff at a time when they want to play it to you rather than when I can watch it. And if it's not and it's on demand and I've got 25 channels showing stuff on demand, and in that there's probably 50 programs that I could watch, there's so much stuff I can't even get to it in the end. It has to be that.
You guys have Disney's solution in the UK now, right? For Apple TV and...
We may have, but I get all the Disney channels through my Sky subscription, which...
Mm-hmm. Same here.
Yeah.
But they just launched the Disney... What's the new Disney service that you can get on the Apple TV? It's UK only right now, and it's all of Disney's content, at least in terms of movies and things, back catalog, and I want to say it's $10 a month. Might be less than that.
I don't know whether it's included. Sky Now is £10 a month, and that's a whole pile of channels and Disney.
I'll find the thing. I was curious to see if you guys even looked into it or had been hearing about it, because I wish it was here.
Yeah.
Because all the stuff that's in the vault, I think, is in the in this new Disney TV thing that they're doing.
Is this on demand, though, always?
Yeah, it's all on demand.
Yeah, that's good.
Disney Life, $10 a month.
So you have got
Disney Insights. Does it include the Disney Channel stuff? Kelly, that was one thing I didn't know. Look, I didn't know if it was only their movies.
I know it's all you can eat. It's basically like Disney-only Netflix.
Yeah, which, again, see, so this is the route, you know, that Apple's saying, okay, fine, the streaming deal didn't work. Here's how you guys are going to do this stuff. And this is what I was talking about, where the problem is Disney, I don't know if I want to pay $10 a month because I don't care about any of the Disney Channel stuff. I would want to pay something for access to the movies, though, because mm-hmm. they have all that stuff in the vault. And then, like, you know, my one daughter's been dying to watch The Lion King, and all I have is an old VHS copy, and I can't buy it anywhere. I can't get it anywhere. Well, I could go steal it. You know, I could download it, pristine HD, you know, Blu-ray rip if I wanted to do that sort of thing. But I'm trying not to do that sort of thing, yeah. you know? And they're making it impossible. So I saw this launch, and I got, oh, this, you know, like you were saying earlier, Ewan, with the subscription stuff, I might even pay for just for 1 month so that she can watch The Lion King.
Yeah, I think,
you know?
There's still an awful lot of the subscription models that just work on the principle of, you know, okay, subscribe to us, but you have to subscribe for a year. Right. No.
Yeah.
You know, sorry. Get stuffed. Yeah. I want a month. That's cute. Month. Well, on my Apple bill, I just want iCloud, my dot iCloud thing to show me a bill. You've settled your Netflix bill like it does now, and that'll be fine. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Anywhere,
so the problem with this is that, you know, another thing that came out recently, and I was talking to my wife about this because she watches NCIS, which is a CBS show. CBS now has a service where you can get all of CBS's stuff for $5.99. The problem is they're going to run into, by not having the kind of bundle that Apple wanted to do, is suddenly consumers are going to have the choice. So I got, you know, $7.99 for Netflix and, you know, my whatever Amazon Prime cost me. And then I'm paying, what is it, $10 a month for HBO. And then I pay $10 a month for Disney. And then I pay $5.99 for CBS and $5.99 for NBC. You see how suddenly
you're not coming out ahead.
It starts to build up.
You know, this is worse than the cable thing that I had.
Mm. Yeah.
Right? This is the path we're going down, and this is what I'm, you know, my ideal service would be when I can pay for a bundle of shows on yes. iTunes. And I can kind of do that in a way now, and that's sort of what we do. That's how I supplement my subscriptions, and that just may be the thing that I do moving forward. If this is the new model, you know, it's like I will pick and choose the few shows, like we buy seasons of Mythbusters, you know, one-off. Yep. And watch a ton of those and then use Netflix and Amazon Prime, which I already have. And Amazon's a whole different animal because they make their money elsewhere. You know, they're kind of like Apple with the apps, right? It's their TV service is really, you know, secondary to all of the Amazon Prime. You know, they want people on Prime so that they're buying more stuff on Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, products. And so it's subsidized. You know, they have a subsidized model. The TV networks don't have these subsidies. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. But the direction it's going in right now, I think what they're going to find is consumers get to a point where they're like, you know, I can only pick three of these things and mm-hmm. everybody else, I'd love to have a couple of your shows, but you're going to miss out because, you know, because Netflix is doing awesome Prime content, you know, original content and original series yeah. and Amazon is, and I'll just watch those because those are great.
I was just about to say, has the bar not been set pretty low by Netflix already? And I don't mean that in terms of quality, because the quality is immensely high, but it's like, if I'm getting great quality from Netflix at $5.99 a month in the UK, yep. am I really going to start chucking out £20 to £30 just mm-hmm. to get Disney? No, I'm not.
That's right. What I'm talking about. They're going to find themselves in the same model that app yep. developers are in right now, and nobody's going to be making any money. And it's an unsustainable model that they're moving into. Apple tried to give them, I think, what would have been a sustainable model, and they rejected it.
Mm-hmm. Because it's going to end up being discovery, too. Like, part of how people find new shows is, like, you know, I have a cable subscription, and I can watch all that stuff, you know, air quote, for free. Because I don't have to pay every time Big Bang Theory comes on. I don't have to pay every time NCIS comes on. I don't have to pay, you know, every time a show comes on to sit and watch a couple and see what I think. And and that's going to be the hard thing about somebody like Adam, who has a set habit, which is, you know, these are the shows I already know I like, and whatever Amazon gives me or whatever Netflix gives me, I'm already getting those. I don't have to go seek them out, and I don't have to pay more for them. And like, I already have a cable subscription, so buying that CBS All Access thing is ludicrous. Right. And I don't get any access to any of that stuff, even though I have a cable subscription, which is the other thing that really chaps me about the CBS one, since it was the example you used. I was like really excited, like, hey, I can put CBS on here. And then like, if I have that thing where TiVo cuts off the last 90 seconds of a show that I was watching, like at least I can go there and watch it. No, you can't, because you didn't pay $5.99 a month on top of whatever you're already paying the cable company in order to get to have watched most of that episode in the first place. And I think the hard part is that like lots of people really want to be excited about this, but we're not at a point where it's going to work for most people yet. And we have to wait for that pendulum to swing all this way and come back again for the content providers to realize like this is not a thing that's going to work for most people. And maybe Apple really was onto something last year or 2 years ago or 5 years ago or however long it takes them to see the light. And we need to start making better deals with the people who make the box in. So, you know, we need to deal with Roku. We need to deal with Amazon. We should put something on the Chromecast. We should do something with Apple TV. Like, they're going to have to start looking at those as independent from the stuff that is already sort of the cable subscriber inertia that they already have.
Don, did you have a point to make that you were saying?
No, well, the only comment I'd make is that, I mean, people's viewing habits are changing significantly. I mean, we have a cable service. I mean, we never, ever watch live stuff. Never, ever. Unless it's something super critical that we need to. If something's on live, we'll tape it and watch it later because we don't want to waste our time skipping through adverts and stuff. You know, or rather waiting for adverts while they're actually on, while it's being broadcast live. So people are getting more and more familiar or more accustomed to sort of on-demand stuff. The thing with, I mean, to be honest, I don't buy a lot in iTunes because I still think like TV shows and stuff in iTunes is still very expensive for what they are. You know, it's like 20 quid for a series of TV shows or something. And I would really like a bundle whereby it was a subscription service that you paid for, would say 100 different channels, and then you cherry pick, you know, 10 channels that you would like to watch. I mean, that would be the perfect sort of solution for me. You know, just because all the channels that we get now on the cable service, 95% of them are just, we never watch them, you know, they just mean nothing to us, they're of no interest whatsoever. But that same bundle, a lot cheaper, where you could go in and cherry pick just the channels that you wanted, would be perfect.
I want cherry picking shows. I mean, I want it really to get to a point where it shows where I pay a bundle, Apple just says, okay, here's everything, here's the entire iTunes library, here's a package that's, you know, 3 shows a month and it costs X, here's a package that's 5, here's one that's 10, 15, and then depending upon how much TV you consume, you know, you can put together basically your own station. Because I don't care who makes the dang show. I care about the show. But, you know, that's not a good model for, again, for the companies who are used to having a cable thing where they can force down the throats, the cable company, you're going to take every show that we make, whether you like it or not, and you're going to pay us for it. That's the current model that they're in. And getting them out of that is going to be almost impossible. And I think Apple was kind of trying to do that. You know, as you mentioned, Ewan, they said, you know, we don't want ESPN 1, 2, and 3. We just want ESPN and we just want the Disney Channel and we just want this. And Disney pushed back and said, no, you can't. You got to take it all and you're going to pay us for it all. Otherwise, we're not doing the deal.
Comments there in the chat room. Eco Bob says, the only thing I watch now is live sport, which means unfortunately I have to subscribe to Sky. I don't begrudge Sky, actually, because I mean, I would quite happily pay the amount that I pay and just have the sports channels on Sky because I think they do brilliantly. Next Thursday, the Big Bash starts, which is cricket that starts at 8 o'clock in the morning for me, live from Australia, 20 over cricket, and I can sit there and have that on while I'm sitting doing editing. I absolutely adore Sky Sports. And it's well worth the money. I think the value from Sky is really, really excellent. And there's a great point. I mean, we've sat and talked about money and that kind of stuff, but the point here, I think you guys have echoed it a little bit, but Miller's saying, you know, I've got Amazon Prime, I've got iTunes and Netflix, and that's all the TV I've got time to watch anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is true. I mean, you know, once things come along, I don't have any more time than I've already got. There was a great tweet from Bill Murray as well last week that said, you get loads of people who say, oh, you know, yeah, I never get the time to watch television. No, but they sit in front of a computer for 8 hours a day watching something on Netflix. Boo says, I've got AMC on BT TV as well, his own AMC channel. Isn't that nice? Tim Cook has made a comment because this week Johnny Ive came up with his design masterpiece for a battery extender pack.
Oh God!
Where's Johnny Ive? What have you done with him? Because that is not a Johnny Ive design. The best comment of the week absolutely goes to Carl Swagger, who said it looks like the 6S has swallowed an iPhone 4.
It does.
Yeah. So,
is that an iPod in your pocket?
What the hell were they thinking? This is the ugly. Well, I did say as well in the Slack room that sometimes when you take pictures of products, it's very difficult to show how they feel in your hand, and there is a possibility that actually with that the prominence that there is, I'm desperately trying not to call it a hump, but the prominence that there is on the back of this thing, that actually probably fits in your palm very nicely, and it might feel fantastic. It won't be great in the pocket experience, maybe.
But yeah, the thing is as well, though, is I mean, it annoys me that people always bang on about Apple being, you know, form over function. You know, they always go for the design to the detriment of the usability of products. You know, case in point, you know, the recent the mouse and you know, the trackpad. You know, people really get a bit annoyed, and then the new keyboard, you know, with no lack of bevels, etc. But the actual design of this, although it's not aesthetically gorgeous, but I can understand why they've done it, because it's a silicone case, so you can take it on and off quite easily now, by, you know, because the battery, it's not a complete sort of stiff case, so you've got flexible ends, so you can pop it out nice and easily. The bottom end has not changed, so it will fit in any accessories that have been designed for the silicone case, so that's going to help people as well. And you know, it's just a battery extender. I don't know. I can understand why people are getting upset, but tend to flip from one to another. Really,
I don't know that many people are upset, as just opposed as like, holy crap, that's ugly, which is very.
A lot of people were upset on Twitter when it came out.
There's no pleasing Twitter.
Apple are doomed.
beyond the design, it's ugly. Fine, whatever. My biggest problem with it was, what exact problem are they solving with this that wasn't already solved? And they've got so many other things that they could have been devoting their engineering, programming, timing, marketing, everything, resources to, other than building this thing. I mean, like, people internally worked on this at some point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So couldn't they have been better used on some other thing?
I think it's like, definitely a money off, leaving money on the table job, because I think I sort of stat that like 80% of people actually buy cases for their iPhones, and sure. I suppose a large percentage of that would be battery cases, and Apple weren't making one, so all that money being left on the table, you know, a couple of months' resources to engineer it and get it fixed, and you know, suddenly they now will take a lion's share of the battery pack. Market.
Well, and you know, profit wise, you know, they're making a ton with the price of the thing. It's super expensive. You don't get much battery. I think it's 1800, somewhere around 1800, 1900 milliamp hours.
Yeah,
that's
I was gonna say it's £79 or $100 effectively. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and my problem with it isn't how it looks. My problem with it is that the light that tells you if it is charging or charge ed is inside the case, so if you plug it in, you can't tell.
Right.
You can't tell if it's done or not.
Have taken a different approach on this, though? I've not actually seen one in the flesh. I've not picked one up. I'm not in this one. But I was reading somewhere that the intention is that you, unlike a normal battery pack, you don't sort of put your phone in until your phone starts depleting, and then you switch it on to boost your phone. You basically just connect it, and it's at one with the phone, and you just charge it up, and then it will actually charge the phone, or it will power the phone until the battery in the case runs out, and then the phone will start to deplete. And apparently it takes for fewer battery cycles on the phone, which is actually a good thing.
Yeah, but I mean, so Don, it's exactly the problem with Kelly's point. I haven't seen one either, but I've seen pictures and I saw a video. The indicator light for when it's charging or needs to be charged is inside the case. So I'm totally with you. I think Apple's intention is that you would always leave it in the case, and because you can charge while it's in the case. And I think the way it works is it depletes the external battery first, and then your internal battery, and you don't get to choose. It just does it all on its own, which I guess is the quote-unquote smart part. But so it's just another odd design decision, because it's like, well, if you guys intended people to have this on all the time and charge it that way, why'd you put the charging light inside between where the phone sits and the battery pack?
I do. You can see dual batteries on the lock screen, now, can't you?
So their answer is you can see it in software. I mean, it shows up in the software on screen, but it's just weird.
Just seems weird.
Like, you could have put a light on the back, right? I mean, I don't...
Well, and it's the latest weird thing that they did, because, you know, isn't it the new Magic Mouse where the charging is, like, here?
Yeah.
So you can't use it while it's plugged in? So, yeah,
there's a photo going around the internet of Apple are doing really well on the design thing, because they've got the iPad, the pencil sticking out the iPad at one angle, they've got the thing sticking out the mouse at the other angle, and then they've got the battery pack now, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
I've got to say, I moved away from the mouse because it was too small for my hand. If they made a bigger version of it, I'd buy it in a heartbeat. This thing, I had a weird thing the other week where I came down and my trackpad just went from full one day to completely empty the following day. I have no idea whether I'd left something resting on it, perhaps, I don't know. But it depleted completely. But other than that, it's been absolutely fine. And I was also saying that there was a problem with... I couldn't use it when I plugged it in to charge it. Well, that's because I put it into a charger in the wall. If you charge it off the computer that you're using it on, it works just fine. So it's a wired connection, which makes you think, well, why didn't they do that with the mouse? Because that would have been dead easy. But I think it's because the mouse curves down at the front. They just haven't got the depth for the charging port. I'm going to go and have a look at one of these. But I think the real reason that's making me think I might stay away from it is the fact that it's made of silicon that picks up every piece of lint in your pocket it can possibly find.
Yeah.
I hate that. You buy the black one, it's pointless because it just looks crap after about 20 seconds. No worries. Patreon. Thank you to everyone who supports us on Patreon. We do appreciate it. It makes a world of difference. We use that money to pay Kyle to do the news show each day. And we also use it to buy little bits of equipment here and there that we may need. We bought Wrighty's light out of it for his little studio setup. And we bought two sets of lights for the Northern studio up there as well for Paul. And it gets put to good use, I promise you. We don't drink any of it. And I just wanted to mention, give a shout out to people that I think we should do this regularly on the shows. And they're the people that I would call our Patreon heroes. Ooh. They are the people that that really are just fantastic and wonderful. First one to shout out to is Billy Zilla. Billy Zilla gives us $27 a month, which I think equates to 20 quid. So thank you, Billy. And over the lifetime, he's given us $432 since he started doing the subscriptions for Patreon. That really is appreciated. Thanks very much, mate. And Mike Collis also gives us $20 a month. That's $260 in the lifetime of his contribution. And the last Patreon star for today, there'll be some more in the big show, I promise you, but the last Patreon star for today is Jim, Jufro Jim. He gives us $15 a month, and he's given us $290 over the period of his subscription. So thank you ever so much to those people for giving us those. We'll do our Patreon heroes every week, because they're the people that make a real difference to what happens in the network. If you'd like to give us a donation just to help support the costs that we've got for running the network, then please send it into British Tech Network is the Patreon. So patreon.com/British Tech Network. And anything you can give will be grateful. If you can just give us a dollar, that's fantastic. Thank you ever so much for that. And if you can give more, then that's also much appreciated. It all goes towards keeping the network running. None of it goes in my pocket or anyone else's pocket. It is only about buying equipment to pay for things for the network. It's nothing else. So the network kind of a little bit stands on its own 2 feet with your support. So cheers. If you've had some issues, because we've had a few people who've dropped off from the Patreon, because PayPal has caused a bit of a problem. I know Muller had an issue with, because of the supposed data breach at Patreon here, the credit card company just went, oh, we're not letting that happen anymore, so you can't have it. And I know PayPal periodically just does like an unsubscribe for no apparent reason, that you have to re-energize it, and people haven't done that occasionally. But there's a new app out, the Patreon app. If you go to the Mac App Store, you can get the Patreon application down. It makes it 10 times easier to subscribe and give a donation to any one of the Patreons that you support, whether it's Tom Merritt or whether it's us. So thanks to those people, and thanks to the Patreon, and thanks to everyone who subscribes on Patreon. It's really, really appreciated. Last thing to talk about then is CarPlay. Mercedes have released an entire line of cars with CarPlay. I looked at this and I thought, well, that's great. Thanks very much. Brilliant. And there's USB devices in there and all kinds of nice stuff and wonderful. Superb. And there's a whole plan of how they're coming out over next year. There's a bit of me's kind of like, I know what CarPlay is. I understand it. I get how it works. But I don't see what it's doing for me over me having a dashboard with an iPhone on it that's connected via Bluetooth and is working just fine anyway. So it's restarted. Yeah. And why it's significantly better than anything else. I don't think, for me, at the moment, I see CarPlay as a sales feature of a car by any stretch of the imagination. Has anyone sampled CarPlay and thinks otherwise?
No, I'd like to. I mean, I would actually make a purchasing decision on, you know, if a car had CarPlay or not. I mean, I've used cars for ages with, you know, the old iPhone in the dashboard holder, and it's not very convenient. I think CarPlay it should make it work better. You know, you've got the integration built into the car itself. You can connect the phone. I think even now you don't have to connect the phone. You used to have to connect the phone with a lightning connector, but I think it does it wirelessly now. You just pop it out of the way, and then it's all optimized. You know, it's at the right height. It's in the right place. It's not obscuring any vents. I mean, the car that I've got now has got it's got its own GPS built in, but it's absolutely awful. It's pants, so I don't use the GPS in the car. I actually have to have my iPhone stuck on a holder in the vent to use GPS. So no, I think it'd just be a nice add-on, and it would just make the whole experience and also you're familiar with all the applications. You know, you've got your podcast apps in there, you've got your maps and everything. You're already familiar with using your iPhone. So just have it integrated into the dashboard, I think it'd be pretty smart.
I'm going to admit to being completely illogical here, but I understand that there is a separation in the fact that there's a Mercedes app, if you like, that shows up on the screen and clearly gives you integration into something to do with Mercedes, therefore that's why it's important to them. But as Apple, there's a bit of me thinking, well, if I turn my iPhone 6 on its side and then you just had a car mode where you only gave me a short number of applications that I would need for driving in a car, like it looks like it does on that app, why wouldn't you just do that? Because that achieves exactly the same thing as I've currently got. I don't see the need for CarPlay to be this special thing.
I think there's integration with the internal systems as well, isn't there? I think you've got the, you know, because there's a Siri button, although, again, we've now got the command that you can say to it now without having to have a hardware switch. But, you know, I just think it's just that level of integration would make life easier. That's all. And just take some of the friction away of using your iPhone in the car.
Yeah, it's just it's a convenience thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Thank you. But anyway, Mercedes is bringing it out.
I think I'll still wait for my Ford
Apple card. Ford retroactively provided Siri hands-free support to all of their customers with sync systems, I think, this past week. One of my listeners emailed me to say that's working great. It's not CarPlay, but it's the Siri's hands-free. And that's an interesting thing because, I mean, that's a Microsoft. The sync is a Microsoft system.
Because they were,
But they retroactively rolled it out to everybody, which I thought was kind of cool.
Isn't that being run on BlackBerry now?
I think they've moved. Yeah, they've moved to a BlackBerry.
It's all gone over to BlackBerry.
On newer ones. But this is, I mean, this is, again, they rolled it out to a bunch of cars. So his older car got a software upgrade, and suddenly he had more Siri integration, which I thought was great.
Not judging, but it's BlackBerry. we've had a review. Thank you very much to the people that take the time. Can you put that on silent before you restart it, please?
I'll start.
We've had a review, thank you very much. If you'd like to leave a review, then go to iTunes, leave us a review. We always read them out. We've got a great one to read tonight from Chris for the big show from last week. But we've had one from Red Grouse. Thank you for writing in. There are a number of Apple podcasts on iTunes, but having listened to most of them, I believe this has the right mix. But this is the one I listen to every week without fail. Yoon's great host. He chairs a lively discussion every week. The discussion involves honest criticism and praise of Apple products and policy. It's not a fanboy podcast, which is why I like it. I love Apple products, but the company isn't perfect, and when they mess up, it should be discussed. That said, the overall tone of the show is very positive, with fanboy and critic well represented. You can pick up some great tips on iOS and OS X hardware. My only criticism, although not enough to deduct a star, thank you for the 5 stars of Redgrass, is to say that Ewan's language could do with toning down a touch. And I like listening to this podcast in the car, but I can't because I've got young kids. So I set a challenge to you, and I know you read these reviews. Can you do the whole show without swearing or blaspheming? If so, I'll donate 50 to a charity of your choice. Keep up the great work, Richard. Thank you very much for the thing. I'm perfectly fine with that because that's a constructive criticism review. I've got no issues with that. That's the way they all should be. Don't call me names. The only thing I would say, Richard, I'll do my very best, mate, but we've always badged ourselves as mates down the pub, and occasionally, especially if alcohol's involved, things slip out. I don't go out of my way to start swearing, and I certainly don't go out of my way to blaspheme, and if I've offended any of that are religious out there, I do apologise, although I'm not religious, so what's one thing and another for different people may be different, but I'll try my hardest, mate, but I can't promise anything. We don't hold ourselves up to be choir boys and girls by any stretch of the imagination, so I'm sorry. This the show and all the rest is sponsored by UK2. Thank you ever so much for them for picking up all of the bandwidth for everything that we do. We've got 4 terabytes sat on UK2 servers of old video. Without them, we couldn't do the show. We couldn't post it. We couldn't let you download it. We couldn't have the NQL channel run, which is brilliant. We've got Not Quite Live. So if you're a live watcher, that's great. You'll know that it comes on. But if you go to britishtechnetwork.com/live and click on the play button when we're not broadcasting, you will get a random show from the past at random, utter random, and it really will be random. And we've got some fabulous shows in there. If you watch the Twitter, if you follow us on @BritishTech, you'll be able to see what's changing and when, so it'll tell you when it is. I do apologise to those people who do follow us on that and didn't mute the BTNNQL hashtag, because for the last 2 days, we've had 2 instances where the server's been at the Christmas sherry and posted out 40 show titles in 20 seconds. We have no idea what happened. Anders dived in and solved it straight away almost. But
it was certainly something.
Yeah. So if you'd like to know what's coming up, then just follow @BritishTech on Twitter and you'll see it come up. But if you don't want to see those tweets come through, then just mute the hashtag BTNNQL and all in caps, and that'll solve your problem. You won't see any of it, but there are some absolute gems in there, and we couldn't do that without UK2 and without 100tb.com. thanks ever so much to them for giving us that facility, and thanks also to the backroom chaps who have done absolutely phenomenal work. Paul Wheatley, Paul Shadwell, and Anders, they've changed us. They've absolutely changed us. We've got live stats now. We've got live review collections. We've got loads and loads of things going on. And there's loads more in the pipe work that I can't tell you about yet because they always tell me off for launching stuff too early. We have got 2 new shows coming, productivity shows coming with Lee Garrett. It's called The Output Show. Watch out for that one. And also we've got The Castaway Show with Righty, which is an unashamed tip of the nod to Desert Island Discs, but with a tech slant and tech people on it. So that'll be coming out in January as well. And there's something else coming in January, but I can't talk about that either. One thing we are going to do, if it's okay with everybody, and that's the assembled crew as well, we need to have a think about when we do the shows, because it's a bit of a struggle at the moment to spread them across 2 days. So my suggestion is that on a Thursday, we will do the Max Show at 7 p.m. in the UK. That's 2 p.m. Eastern. And we'll then do the Big Show at 9 p.m. In the UK, that's 4 p.m. Eastern. So they'll follow one after the other, and they'll both be on a Thursday, and it'll be concurrent run straight in, because that way I've only got to lose 1 day of work time. And if we do, you know, get a problem with work cropping up and that kind of stuff, then we can split them out. But I think that's going to be the new times from January onwards. So there we go. If you've got a real significant problem with any of that, send me a note and we'll take it on board, but I think that's probably going to work out best. I think more people can watch us live, which is a nice thing there. Right, it's time for the cool thing. Donald, start us off.
You've probably already done this, so I apologise if you have, but I've got to mention this application I'm running on my iPad Pro at the minute, which I mentioned in the pre-show, which is Duet. It's an iOS app and a Mac app that runs on your Mac, and basically it turns your iPad into an external monitor. The performance is fantastic. It's really, really good. Not laggy at all. And I think it's just a great addition, especially if you're, I mean, I've got my MacBook, the MacBook One, and I can connect the iPad Pro to the MacBook One, and basically the screen's roughly the same size. In fact, I think it can be a higher resolution at some point. So it turns your portable monitor, your portable laptop, into a dual screen display very, very easily. And I'm using it today. I've got my Mac Pro, which I'm got the Skype call running through, but my webcam is off to the side. So what I've done is I've put the webcam on a box and I put my iPad Pro next to it. So I'm actually able now to look at the camera and also look at the iPad Pro and see the live stream. And it works brilliantly. Really impressed. Duet.
It's about a tenner, isn't it?
It's not very expensive. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how much it is. I bought it years ago, but they keep improving it. And they've just brought out a new version that's optimized for the iPad Pro. But yeah, it's not very expensive.
Awesome. If you're sitting driving along, you're thinking, oh, gee, come on. Every time you do this, you know, I'm driving along, I can't go and click a link when I'm driving along. I've bloody forgotten when I've got home. Then don't worry about it. Go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, scroll over the calendar and get to the 11th of December. Click on that and you'll get a full transcript of everything that's gone on during the show. Any of the stories, they've been posted in the chat room. Any of the links for the cool things, they're already in the chat room. If you like, it's our show notes. The only caveat is you will find all of the rubbish that everyone else tweets in there and posts. And whatever you do, don't click any links that Muller puts in. We say it every week, but people still click them and then write in and complain. Do not click Muller's links.
We tried to tell you.
Adam, what do you have for us, sir?
I'm going to do something unusual. I'm going to pick a pick. It's a UK company, and it's not a Mac pick. But I think it's appropriate because I think we had Hour of Code recently, or that's coming, and it's a coding programming thing. There's a company called Kano, K-A-N-O, and they're making a computer kit for kids to learn programming and get inspired by engineering and stuff like that, and it is amazing. It's brilliant. It is... say it's $100 US. I should give you the British. I put the UK link in the chat. Yeah. And what you get is it's basically a Raspberry Pi and a speaker and a case and a keyboard, a wireless Bluetooth keyboard. And the kid basically builds their little computer. You hook it up to any television via HDMI, or you can hook it up to a monitor. And then what's really brilliant about it is the operating system. They've developed an operating system. It's Raspberry Pi compliant because it's basically a Raspberry Pi Series B computer. Yeah. And then it walks the kids through all kinds of coding exercises. So they'll, you know, program Snake in Python, or there's programming, doing Minecraft modifications. And there's a whole art program where you code with different art functions that they've set up, and you can make your own pictures and you can share them, and the kids have profile, and they've just done an amazing, amazing job with it.
This is awesome.
Yeah. And they just released a screen kit now too, that you can get. And I think you can get it all for about like $220 You got the whole kit, and they've got discounts going on right now. And it's just a ton of fun to inspire kids to get into programming and engineering and things like that. And because it's Raspberry Pi based, if you don't want to pay for their kit, and again, I encourage you, because all the stuff you get with it, I think, is great. They also have, it's just open source. So you can run, if you have a Raspberry Pi, certain models, the operating system is called Canix, and you can download it and you can make your own build, and you could run it on your own Raspberry Pi if you want to. And I think you still get access to their whole, you know, online system where with the profiles and the programming exercises and stuff like that. But there's badges, so, and you earn rewards as you work through the system, and you can level up, and they've kind of gamified the whole process as well. And it's just brilliant. It's a great holiday idea, gift for any kid, you know, who's into engineering and computers, or if you want to inspire a kid who maybe is on the cusp.
What's the price in the States? Because it's coming out as £89 here, and we're getting humped.
What?
Well, the screen kit is $130. The one that comes with the screen, not you don't hook up to the TV. If you want to build a light board, that one is $90. And
yeah, the basic kit is $99. It's like $99 in the US.
The basic kit here is £90. Thieving bastards. Sorry.
Well, they're a UK company, Richard. So I don't know.
I didn't last very long there, did I? Sorry, Richard.
I tried.
I did try.
So this is not the US company's you screwing the Brits this time around? You're screwing yourselves. I don't know. It's well worth it. It'd be worth it if it was more. And it's discounted right now. So normally in the U.S. it's $149. It's $99 right now.
Yeah.
I just had the UK pricing up, so I don't know how it converts.
Me and Ellis are going to learn to code on Christmas Day.
That's going to be amazing.
We're going in the den. We won't.
And if you don't, I mean, you can go buy a Raspberry Pi for $15 and download the operating system. They make it available. So you have other options. It's just this kit's nice because you get it all in one package. You get the keyboard that comes with it. It's kind of, and it's fun for the kids to build it. So you're paying somewhat for the experience more than the technology. Yeah. But the reason I'm picking it is they've done a brilliant job of creating a great experience for kids that's really approachable and accessible.
Yeah, that looks it.
And they've done a really nice job on the software side of things. So
yep, no question. And you said there's a developer thing at dev.cano.me as well.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That's the operating system. So if you have a Raspberry Pi and you want to try it out, you can just download it, image a disk, and boot off of it versus Raspbian, which I think is what most people use.
I'm 90 quid light already. Damn you. Kelly G, what have you got for us?
I have something that's way less expensive. How's that?
I like that, but it's an extended battery, isn't it? So I'm probably safe. I'm not going to buy it, I don't think. But
no, it's not a battery at all.
Oh, go on.
Okay, it is the App Camp for Girls Quiz Compendium 2015.
I clicked the link you put in the thing, which is the anchor case. But never mind. I got that.
Oh, yeah, that was just an alternate thing that I thought would be a cool thing to have. And for people who want a lean and mean battery case, like, there are other options out there. So every year, I know I've come on here and told you guys all about App Camp for Girls, so I'm not going to go into that too much, except that it's awesome we would really like to start it in the UK. So whenever somebody wants to start App Camp over there, then we would be more than happy to help you build it. Every year when we do App Camp at the end of the week, each team has an app, a quiz app that they have built. And what we did for this year was we collected all of them and put them in an app. It's 99 cents in the US. And you can take all the quizzes and find out important aspects of your personality, like what character in a murder mystery you are or what chair you would be. These are important questions. These are the kinds of things people need to know. So you should pick it up and take the quiz, and the sooner the better, honestly, because we're trying to get to the front page of the App Store. We were number one in entertainment with the previous app. We got to number one in entertainment and number 11 in paid apps. And all of the money that we get for each purchase goes right into App Camp to purchasing equipment, to helping get new locations off the ground. We have another couple of locations we're hoping to get off the ground this year, and it all goes to helping make all of that a reality. So it's awesome. It's super fun. You can check out all the different quizzes that people made this year, all of the artwork, all of the code. We give them a template, a really basic template, and it's up to them to decide what kind of quiz it is, what the questions are, what the responses are for each question, and ultimately what the results come out to be. If they want any artwork, they have to draw it. They draw it and then scan it and then add it into the app. They've built these in Xcode on MacBook Pros, just like any other developer would have. And it's super fun to see the output of that. Like, that's the best part, I think, for me is that we get to show off, like, this is what we were doing all of that week that we were in Portland, or all of that week in Seattle. And this one is all the camps from this year. So it's Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, British Columbia. And you guys should check it out. It's not very expensive, and it's super fun. And we've added a new feature to this quiz compendium as opposed to the previous edition. With this one, you can share your answers via Twitter.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Some interactivity.
So, there you go. Yeah. Go check them out.
Publicity as well. Publicity for you. Excellent. Good pick. Thank you. My cool thing is Xe Cello. I don't know if any of you are into this. I've only started this week because Paul Wheatley signed us up. We used to run Google Docs all the time that had, you know, to-do lists of things that we wanted to share amongst the backroom staff at BTN and, you know, what progress was going on and that kind of thing. And it was always just a spreadsheet that Paul manually updated. One of the things that he's got us into is Trello, which is a fantastic application. It's brilliant. It lets you do T-cards effectively, like a T-card board, to track your projects and create new cards and create new activities and move cards along through the activities and things like that. Or you can even set up company columns and then stay within those company columns, which is what I use for work now. But Trello's great. But one of the things I hate about web applications is actually going on the web to use them. I'd rather have an interface on the desktop that I could just leave open in the corner and call forwards, because I've got a terrible habit. I think everyone does this. You know, you sit and finish on a page in a web browser and you don't look at the tabs and you just click close. I've closed Trello now. This thing's an application. It sits there for you. I think it cost me £6. But XCCello, XCCello, and it's an integration app for Trello.
Nice.
If you don't use Trello, it's good. It's real good. I've only been using it this week, but I love it.
Is that an in-app purchase? Because it's saying free on the Mac.
Oh, maybe I've got it wrong. Maybe it is free. Maybe I looked at one that was £6 and I bought this one instead for free. Right.
I use Trello, so I'm just downloading and installing it. It's come up as free.
That was a nice surprise. If anyone can actually put a link for me into the chat room, because I've just tried to do it and it's given me that now you've already purchased it, all you can do is share it with someone else. It won't let me do a copy link.
Oh. Yeah, I've got it.
Thanks, man. There you go, XCCello. XCCello. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. D?
Mr. D, that's me. You'll find me over at screencastonline.com, where we've got our really brand new website. If you haven't checked it out, go and check it out. It's all nice and modern and fast and really, really nice. Jamie Peak did a fantastic job. So screencastonline.com or the magazine, Screencast Online Monthly. Although it's not in newsstand anymore, you can just search for Screencast Online on the App Store and it will pop up. And our soon-to-be-announced, don't tell anyone, our Apple TV app will be out, hopefully, in the next couple of weeks, so you can watch all the tutorials on your Apple TV as well.
Awesome. First thing I'm going to put on. First thing. If you don't subscribe to Screencast Online, especially if you're a new Mac user, if you've only got a Mac in sort of the last... I know we've cost a couple of people $2,000 because they've listened to this show and they thought, oh, I'll buy a Mac. but if you're a brand new Mac user, you must subscribe to Screencast Online. It's the stupidest thing you can do not to, I promise you. Adam, where are you, sir?
I am over at MacCast at MacCast.com and MacCast on Twitter and pretty much every other social media thing. And then you can catch me every week also on the iOS show at theiosshow.com.
And MacCast should be your number two podcast subscription after ours. Most definitely. Kelly G.
You can find me writing things over at the Mac Observer, and occasionally I show up on the Daily Observations podcast there. And you can also listen to Mike Rose and I crack each other up with terrible impressions, among other things, on the After Show, which is at aftershowpodcast.com.
Excellent. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, Ewenrankin. You can also join our Slack room if you want to come where the real conversation is. If you'd like to join the Slack room, all you've got to do is send me an email to britishnetnetwork@gmail.com and I will send you an invitation. There's a few conditions in there, no religion, no politics, but apart from that, it's pretty free form. You say what you like, show what you like, do what you like. I've got to say, since I've been in there all week, and because we opened it up to the great unwashed masses on Monday, and Muller came in, and that hasn't sunk in yet.
I was there before.
Oh, you were right. But now we've got everyone in there, it's great. There's a real good vibe going on, and I have peeked at Twitter literally 20 times, I think, since Monday. I've really not been bothered with it at all. And I'm calmer, and I'm happier, and I'm more enjoyable. And probably the people that follow me on Twitter are calmer and happier and more enjoyable with me not being on there. So, and I don't rant in the Slack room. I just chit-chat. There we go. So, britishnetwork@gmail.com, and just title it, Let Me Into Slack, and I'll give you an invitation. You can come and have a try. There is a few stipulations, and good behaviour is required, and the admin axe will swing freely, I promise you, if it needs to. But we're all good. Next week, I won't be here. The host of the show will be Santa, and it will be the Christmas quiz.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, God, we're going to get drunk.
So it will be on Friday, and it will be before school's out. So
Force Awakens Day.
Force Awakens Day, yes.
Star Wars.
We're not doing it. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Not do the show in the evening. Are you guys 18th or 17th? We're 18th. Are you 17th?
No, we're the 18th.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We're 18th too. So we will we'll have the Christmas quiz, and we'll see whether Kelly can win again this year. Sorry, mate. Am I stopping you from doing anything?
Oh, no, I'm good. Yeah, a bit noisy.
I'm watching the train wreck for Muller.
I know. He's got the old... Here we go. His computer's in a bit of a state, mate. He's been trying to get on, and oh, that's okay. That's helpful.
Yeah.
Oh, you got no valid node structure.
Yeah,
that's bummer.
Yeah, that's shit. So you're gonna have to reinstall everything. Sorry, mate.
He's got some backups.
We're gonna do a bit of research on his computer and see if we can get it up and running. Failing that, we're gonna reinstall El Capitan.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Oh my.
Who brings a plastic bag to an audio show?